In fact, for the decade, the last bench of the decade, huh? We're here until 7 o'clock. We've lots to cover over the next hour. We're going to have a reaction from Sarsfield's win in the Premier 1 Under-21 Hurling Championship today. We're going to be talking to Cork's Dara Fitzgibbon after the launch of the Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon Sigerson and Higher Education Championships earlier on in the week. We're also going to hear from Larry Tompkins a little bit later on as he reflects on his career. We're going to look back on today's action as well and report from the Premier League, including Man United getting beaten and Chelsea on the way to victory against Tottenham. You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Hi, Rory and Ryan here with you until 7pm, the last show before Christmas as well, most importantly. If you'd like to get in touch with us, text us 0868 104 106. You can tweet us as well at Big Red Bench is the place to do that. Ryan's going to get us up to date on everything that happened today.
Yeah, cheers, Rory. We'll start with football and a Christmas miracle for Watford fans everywhere as Manchester United's costly errors saw them beaten 2-0 by bottom at the of the table, Watford at Vicarage Road.
Yeah, Nigel Bidmead was watching this one for us.
Watford 2, Manchester United 0. Watford's first home win of the season came thanks to 2 goals in 4 minutes just after the restart. United goalkeeper David De Gea was at fault for the first. He let Ismaël Sarr's scuffed volley slip through his hands. And United fullback Aaron Wan-Bissaka was culpable for the second. He tripped Sarr in the area and Troy Deeney scored from the spot, his first goal of the season. Watford 2, Manchester United 0.
Man United were terrible, but that mistake by David De Gea was one of the worst goalkeeping errors I've seen in quite a long time.
Oh, that was bad. Yeah, that was very bad. It's on our Twitter. If you haven't seen it, you shared it earlier on, Rory. It was a really bad
it's
mistake.
It's like he's going to catch the ball, takes his eye off it, the ball goes through his hands, hits him in the face, square in the face. All it needed was that, you know, that comedy sound effect and a boing, yeah, and it hits his face, hits the post and goes in. Absolutely.
It was like something out of Dodgeball or a comedy movie.
A lot of people saying that David De Gea has passed it on Twitter and he's been making more and more mistakes. His confidence certainly low, but that was one of the worst goalkeeping holders I think I've ever seen.
Oh, 100%, yeah, definitely. Elsewhere, just under 20 minutes left in Tottenham's meeting with Chelsea at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Now, 2 Willian goals have given Chelsea a 2-0 lead, but there's drama doesn't stop there, Rory.
Yeah, Ian Beach.
Tottenham 0, Chelsea 2, and Tottenham have been shown a red card. Son Heung-min sent off. I don't know if you remember David Beckham being sent off in the World Cup in 1998 for England against Argentina. It was a similar incident. Son Heung-min put down on the floor by an opponent, Rudiger. He then kicked out, flicked out with the studs of his boots at the player standing above him, and after a VAR check, he was shown a straight red card. It's Tottenham 0, Chelsea 2.
Yeah, that's a very good comparison there by Ian Beach. It was very similar to Beckham against Argentina. But letter of the law, I suppose, has to go. But Rudiger's reaction, like he'd just gone down like he'd been shot in the stomach, as opposed to just like, you know, got a tap of a boot. Well,
Rudiger definitely made a meal of it, but you do have to say, I suppose, it like when you actually see it and how close the ref was, not that matters, but it definitely, there was intent there, you know, you can see Son did lose his cool and he did kind of lash out a little bit, like, so I suppose by letter of the law, you're not going to get away with that with VAR anymore.
That's his third red card of the season though as well. You wouldn't think of Son as a particularly dirty player, but that
nicest
is
man
his
in
third
football by all accounts.
But now it's 3 red cards.
Exactly, yeah. Sure, look, everyone has a dark side, I suppose. Yeah. Elsewhere, just one game in the championship today, Sheffield Wednesday beating Bristol City 1-0 at home. That's bumping them up to third place for Christmas Day. Liverpool were crowned world champions for the first time after winning FIFA's Club World Cup in Qatar last night. They did it after we went off air at 7 o'clock yesterday evening because it went to extra time. They beat Brazilian side Flamengo 1-0 thanks to a strike from Roberto Firmino. Now in Gaelic games, the Premier 1 Under-21 Hurling Championship final took place this afternoon. A late goal for Sarsfield's seen them crowned champions at Páirc Uí Chaoimh by just a single point. Final score there, Sarsfield 2-17, Middleton 22 points. Meanwhile, the Under-21A Hurling Championship final, that's just gotten underway for Moy and Newcestown going head-to-head. It's also on the 4G pitch in Páirc Uí Chaoimh this evening. We'll keep up to date on that one throughout the show.
Yeah, from IGA tweeting us there, it's Newcestown leading by 2 points to 1 after 3 minutes.
Cheers, Rory. In rugby, Munster moved four points clear of Connacht at the top of Conference B in the Pro 14 yesterday evening. It was a 19 points to 14 victory at the Sports Ground. Jack O'Donoghue's 25th minute try, coupled with 14 points no less from the boot of JJ Hanrahan, securing a sixth league win of the season for Johan van Grand's side. So Munster in flying form there. In darts, Fallon Sherrox pulled off an even bigger shock at the PDC World Darts Championship in London last night after making history by becoming the first woman to win a match at the event. She's now knocked out world number 11 Mensur Sulevic in the second round. And Rory, I was saying to you just before we came on air there, she won the women's title not so long ago and she got £12,000 for it. And by beating Sulevic now, and she's got into the last 32, she's after winning £25,000 for it.
Twice as much for winning the last 64.
She'd be better off getting to the last 32 of this than winning the women's world title twice.
Shows the disparity between men and women's sports, especially in terms of pay. That's an incredible achievement. I mean, like she was trending on Twitter last night, creating all the headlines, and playing some good darts as well. So I mean, like, this is a fantastic story.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's a really, really good story. She used to be a hairdresser, and she's just, her dart is, I didn't see her now last night, but I saw her first round game, and she was unbelievable, and the crowd were right behind her, and it was really good. It was a real moment now. Absolutely. Elsewhere, Michael van Gerwen continues his defence of the PDC World Darts Championship. He's in third round action against Englishman Ricky Evans at the Ali Pally later this evening. Already today, Stephen Bunting booked his place in the fourth round with 4-0 over Johnny Clayton. In golf, Adam Scott has won the Australian PGA Championship for the second time. The world number 18 shot a final round of 69 to win by 2 shots on 13 under par. And finally, for now, friend of the show, Ross Bullman. I'll never refer to him as anything else. Friend of the show, Ross Bullman, is in action in the last 64 of the German Masters tonight. The all-native takes on David Grace at 7 p.m. this evening. He defeated world number 14 Barry Hawkins last night, and a win tonight will see him into the first round proper of the German Masters.
That was an incredible result last night, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. Yeah, that's great. I'm delighted for him, and I hope if he can get past David Grace now today, to get into the German Masters next year would be huge for him. So that'd be great. So best of luck, Ross.
Yeah, I'm just seeing Jacob Steinberg as well, Guardian reporter on Twitter. He's just tweeted saying, announcement coming over the PA system at New White Hart Lane said there's been racist abuse from the crowd, and that the allegation that the racist abuse has been aimed at Chelsea's Antonio Rudiger, which is not what we want to see.
No.
The game was held up for a while as well because, was it a coffee cup?
It was full of something as well, whether it was full of coffee or beer or whatever, I don't know, but there was some cup. Or something worse. There was something thrown at Kepa, the Chelsea goalkeeper. Kepa is
just missed them.
It did just miss him. It was quite the throw. You got to hand it to the guy. Obviously, not condoning that. It's ridiculous and it shouldn't happen. But just about missed him, and that kind of stopped up the game for about another 2 or 3 minutes. It was only a few minutes after Son had got sent off. So it's quite the rowdy game there.
Yeah, it's been fairly highly charged. All right, but it is Chelsea leading 2-0 away to Tottenham. 12 minutes left on the clock there. Well, as Ryan mentioned today, Sarsfields crowned the Premier 1 under-21 hurling champions after that narrow win over Middleton, 217 to 22 points. Ray Ryan was speaking to the Assembly media afterwards, including our man Andrew Horgan.
Look, I did think the game was going from us. Thought Middleton had our number up now today. Just things didn't seem to go right in areas that we thought we'd be strong in. But look, we just kept asking the lads to keep in there, keep fighting, keep winning a point or two, and there's always a chance. The age-old saying that goals win games. You know, we got two important goals at two important times in the match. And kept us in the game. And we're just delighted just to kind of squeeze out another 1 point. And look, we were very happy with about 22, 23 minutes of the first half. We thought we controlled the game. We were working well. But Milton just got a hold of midfield there. Fairness to Sam Crook, midfield Tommy O'Connell, really poured into the game. We won nearly every break, every second ball, which is the most important thing in hurling, really, to be honest. So look, we got back in, we gathered the troops, and same as last week against Blackrock, we just had to knuckle down and put in the hard work, and that's what we did.
Is Liam Healy, and once again he's still up to play there?
Yeah, look, he's a fantastic player. For me, I don't know how he's not on the Cork panel at the moment. He's not the biggest man, but he's just so brilliant, he's so brave, so strong in the tackle, so intelligent, super striker of the ball, he's got everything. You know, so if you're telling me that there's 15 better forwards in the county than him.
Pitch up again.
Look, it's fantastic. You know, for the club, we've had a couple of mediocre years, for want of a better word, after having such a strong period there for a long time. But look, you know, it's great to get silverware back in the club, and look, these are the future. And future bright.
Des, your brother Pat now will be asking for a bit of coaching advice in the under-20s.
I doubt that somehow. I think he knows a lot more than me. I'm only learning from him and picking a little tidbit off him every now and again. So, it's just great to have him there, like, and he's been helping us out all year. You know, he's a phenomenal man, and he's got a great hurling brain, so any little bit that I can learn from him, the better I get.
Celebrations will be plenty down in Glenmire and Riverstone tonight.
Big old Christmas match again, I can tell you that.
Just finally, so what does it mean to you? We kind of saw that it seemed to be slipping away maybe at the end, but what does it mean to you personally to win?
Look, it's nice. It's my first experience of management. I've been involved with coaching before. My first experience of management, so you know, it hasn't really hit me yet, but it's phenomenal. But it's not about me. It's about the players. It's about the club. We're just people who help out, and look, thankfully we got the win in the end.
And just in terms of Liam Healy, it looked like the game was maybe nearly over. You're 2 points down and he got the ball and put it in the bottom corner.
It's never over when you have players like Daniel Hogan, Liam Healy, Jack O'Connor and all these backs that are fighting for every ball coming in. The game is never over when you've got players of that calibre.
That's Ray Ryan there speaking after beating their opponents today. Middleton 217 to 22 points is how it finished. There'll be some celebrations down in Sars tonight. Still Chelsea leading by 2-0, 81 minutes on the clock there at New White Hart Lane. We are going to stick with Gaelic Games. The launch of the 2020 Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon Sigerson and Higher Education Championships took place during the week. Electric Ireland's first class rivals campaign celebrates unexpected alliances formed by county rivals coming together in pursuit of a common goal to win some of the most coveted titles in GAA. UCC in Cork star Fitzgibbon was at the launch and spoke to Oisín Langan.
Star Fitzgibbon of Cork, Charleville and UCC were here at the launch of the Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon and Sigerson Cup campaigns for 2020. You're a busy man at the moment. You've got commitments with Cork, you're doing exams, and UCC will defend their title this year in the Fitzgibbon Cup. You're getting underway on the weekend of the 11th and 12th of January. It's going to be a big clash with NUIG. How are you feeling about it all?
Yeah, I suppose the last couple of weeks have been really busy. We were back doing a couple of sessions with Cork, doing a few sessions at UCC and also doing exams. So looking forward to getting the Christmas period. And then once the Christmas period is over, we'll be back starting with UCC, a couple of challenge games, and then the first round of the Fitzgibbon Cup on 12th of January. So it's obviously going to be a really tough challenge. It's a new challenge for us, I suppose, really, because we're the defending champions. So I suppose everyone's going to be out for us. So we're just looking forward to it.
I suppose there's a good relationship between the management team of UCC and the management team of Cork. Literally, they're blood relatives. So that must help, the fact that there is an understanding and the fact that, you know, you won't be overtrained, you'll be fresh for your college, you'll be fresh for your club, and the balance is right. You're not kind of forced to do too much by either.
Yeah, I suppose it's hugely helpful. I suppose they're really similar in their approach to the game as well, Tom and Kieran. But I suppose at this level, you'd expect every college manager and inter-county manager to have a balance. I suppose for us 21, 22-year-olds, it's probably the most busiest time of the year, January, February and March, with all the games and everything we have to balance. So, look, we're just kind of getting ready for the new year again and just looking forward to all the games to start.
You mentioned there UCC are the defending champions. Talk to me about last year's campaign. It must have meant an awful lot to you and to your teammates to win an Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon Cup.
Yeah, I suppose it was a huge achievement for us, really. I suppose it was kind of a weird one for me because I was involved for so long with my club Charleville in the All-Ireland run to the All-Ireland final. So, I suppose we suffered a disappointing defeat in that, but to come straight back in a couple of days later with all the boys in UCC, and we had a great win over DCU, so it was just a great buzz around the place from the DCU game up into the final against Mary Eye, and that carried over to, and we had a great performance in the final, and then the celebrations after were incredible.
And it's a strange time, isn't it? I mean, obviously this campaign is hashtag first class rivals, so you're a Cork man, but you're trying to win a big competition with Tipperary guys and guys from Waterford and guys from Limerick and all over the place. I think Paddy O'Loughlin is part of your squad from Limerick. Obviously Mark Kyo, who's also here today, who is already in action for Tipperary, or who has already been in action for Tipperary this season. How does that balance work when you're in college? You know, you're coming up against guys in the summer and in the league, and then you're trying to play with them in the college competitions.
Yeah, it's great just being able to play with players. I suppose the only opportunity you get to play with players from opposite counties like Limerick and Tip. I suppose I would have lived with Paddy or Lachlan for 2 years in college as well. So you build great friendships with these guys. I suppose the rivalry is only kept for the 60 or 70 minutes you're playing the game. I suppose you're training together with UCC, you're trying to pass your exam with all your friends as well. And I suppose you build a friendship from that. And it's incredible to get the opportunity to play with the likes of Mark, the likes of Paddy, the likes of Cullen Rowe from Waterford, all these guys. I suppose the only opportunity you have throughout your career to play with these fellas.
Do you learn from each other? Do you help each other improve?
Definitely, you see the differences that some of the Tip guys or the Limerick guys might have to a few of the Cork guys, and I suppose you can bring that into your own game then as well. And I suppose, look, we've got a hugely talented squad. I think we've nearly over 20 players in inter-county teams from all over Ireland, and trying to get on the UCC team alone is as hard as trying to get on an inter-county team at the moment.
Would you hope to emulate Mark Keogh this season? Because we saw last year he had a really good Fitzgibbon Cup campaign, and he kind of took that momentum, brought it into the summer with Tip, and ended up coming off the bench and scoring a point or two in an All-Ireland final, and now he has the Celtic Cross. Would you hope to emulate that in 2020?
Yeah, definitely. I suppose you saw the campaign. He got man of the match in the All-Ireland or in the Fitzgibbon Cup final, and I suppose he carried that momentum the whole way through. And I suppose all these Tip guys, they nearly have every All-Ireland medal you can win now between minor 21 and senior. And I suppose for the likes of me, Mark Coleman, Robbie O'Flynn, Shane Kingston, we haven't won any All-Ireland yet. So I suppose we kind of look towards their example and try and bring that to our game.
And Kieran is back in. I'm not sure, did you work under him first time around? But look, obviously, I suppose that's good that you know him. There's not uncertainty. You all kind of know what's what within the squad. Sometimes when a new manager comes in, it takes a bedding in period or whatever. But that won't be the case this time around, or isn't the case this time around.
Yeah, I suppose Kieran's back because he has so much faith in us, and he thinks that he can bring the best out in us. I suppose when he was involved in 2016 and 2017, he would have given four or five of us, including myself, our debut and thrown us into the deep end because he had so much faith in us. But I suppose it's a different kind of scenario this time around because we kind of have a couple of years under our belt and we have to kind of push on now. But as I said, he came back in because he has so much faith in us. And 2019 was a disappointing season, I suppose, the way it ended against Kilkenny in Croke Park, and we're just trying to rectify that this year in 2020.
Do you think much about what went wrong last year, or do you just have to kind of let that go and say, right, you know what, it's a new year, it's totally different, there's no point in holding on to the past or thinking too much about it?
Oh, of course, we have to look at what kind of went wrong and try and rectify our mistakes, and try and to build a better performances in 2020, I suppose. Our performances in 2019 were a bit patchy, but Munster is so competitive, it's kind of an achievement in itself nearly to get out of Munster with the teams you've seen in 2018. Tip didn't even get out of Munster in 2019, now they're All-Ireland champions. So I suppose we just have to take it week by week, session by session. We start with the Munster League in a couple of weeks and we build it towards the league and then we get ready for championship.
You have a nice trip to Dungarvan on December 29th. I'm looking forward to that. Just before I let you go, it's an early start for the Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon Cup. You're away to NUI Galway. In the Fitzgibbon Cup, it is a group format, so there is a bit of room for manoeuvre and a slight margin for error, but you don't want to have to rely on that. How tough will that be going to Galway for that first match?
Yeah, it'll be hugely tough, I suppose, especially coming in as defending champions. Galway's have a lot of players in development squads, etc., from Galway. And I suppose, look, we got one over them in the quarter final last year, so they're going to be ready for us. And I suppose the group stage, we're only in a group of three, so we don't have that margin for ever many other teams we have in the other groups. So we're going to have to be ready for it in the 12th of January.
And that's going to be quite a day, isn't it? Because that's a double header with the Sigerson Cup game between UCC and NUIG. That is straight knockout. Do you think there'll be a bit of a buzz among the GA crowd in the college ahead of that?
Yeah, there should be a huge buzz, I suppose. We did the double as well at UCC. We're going to have our awards night, presenting our medals in the next couple of weeks for both teams. So there should be a great buzz heading into 2020 season, I suppose, to defend both titles.
Dara Fitzgibbon, thank you very much for joining us here at the Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon and Sigerson Cup launch. And for those who want to follow the campaign on social media, you can do so via hashtag First Class Rivals. Dara, thank you.
Thank you.
Dara Fitzgibbon there in conversation with Oisín. Right, coming up to full time, a couple of minutes left to go of normal time. Chelsea still leading Tottenham with 2 goals to nil at White Hart Lane in that bad tempered Premier League clash. And in the under-21A hurling championship final, 16 minutes gone, down on the 4G pitch in Porkeycui, Fermoy leading Newstown by 6-4. Now you heard Oisín reference Tipperary's Mark Keogh, who is Dara's UCC teammate. Oisín also spoke to Mark.
Well, Mark Kill of Kilsheelan, Kilcash, Tipperary, and of course UCC were here today to launch the 2020 Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon Sigerson and Higher Education Championships. Electric Ireland's first class rivals platform in 2020 aims to celebrate the unexpected alliances formed when county rivals united by their college come and play together in pursuit of one common goal. People can follow everything that's going on in the Higher Education Championships through the hashtag First Class Rivals. Mark, what is that like when you're playing in UCC in your case, and you're playing with guys you're normally kind of thinking of playing against? I'm talking about the likes of Shane Kingston of Cork, and even today Dara Fitzgibbon of Cork is here. Paddy O'Loughlin from Limerick is in the squad. Colin Roche from Waterford in the squad. That to name just a few. What's it like when you come together with these guys when normally these are guys you're playing against?
Yeah, do you know, it's kind of different. Kind of every different player has different personality, and do you know, sometimes when you're playing against a player and then you meet him in person, you know, you can have a different perception of what they're really like, and you know, you mightn't like someone on the pitch, and then when you get to know him, you might be nearly best friends with him, and essentially, kind of that's what college is about, and kind of as you said, we all kind of get together for the common goal, and if you don't have that bond in the team, I don't think you're able to reach that common goal. So you know, it's great, and getting to know lads is definitely one of the major things you have to do to win a Fitzgibbon.
And you won it last year, as you've already said there. I did notice when I watched your games and saw them up close that there was a great bond between this team. And I know that's a bit of a cliche to say that about a winning team, but there genuinely is. Is that something you work on? Is that something that just happens? How do you get that bond?
There is, yeah. Do you know, it's not... It might necessarily be through training and through games, like, you know, it might be through activities, and the managers are great for things like that. You know, down in UCC, it's kind of for organising activities between ourselves. Tom Kingston, our manager, is great. He's been around a long time and has won a lot of Fitzgibbon Cups, and he kind of knows what it takes to win one. And as you said, like, you mightn't get much contact with the players apart from hurling against them. And so when you're hurling with them, you definitely need to know each other and be able to play for each other, definitely.
And for yourself, the Fitzgibbon Cup was great last year. I mean, you took the momentum of winning a Fitzgibbon Cup with UCC and having an absolutely storming final. You took that momentum into the inter-county season with Tipperary and ended up winning in All-Ireland. And you came off the bench in the final and scored one or two points against Kilkenny. So the Fitzgibbon Cup is something that, you know, really improves hurlers and can provide, as we say, that momentum going into inter-county competition.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it gave me a lot of confidence and gave me a real like good platform kind of going into inter-county season. And kind of when you know you're kind of there or thereabouts against county players, like the Fitzgibbon Cup is such a high standard, and it gave me real confidence going into the season, and kind of knowing that I had a lot of work done, and it kind of just allowed me to drive on in terms of kind of the confidence of playing in inter-county Ireland.
I heard Ger Cunningham say over the weekend, he was actually doing commentary of your game against Clare for the Irish Examiner. He was saying that you have the ability to take players on and run at players. Is that something you like doing? Is that something that you've kind of added to your game, or has that always been something that you've brought?
Well, probably not necessarily, but it's kind of been kind of taught into me by kind of various managers, and they see that's the best way to kind of up my game, and I take that on every advice I can. And I remember Ger, like, he used to always tell me to take on my man, and when I take on my man, kind of things happen. And Ger was a great coach, and he's given me great advice.
Yeah, and of course he's coaching you at UCC. He's part of Thomas' management panel. Speaking of that game against Clare, I know you lost. I know it's not the most important game in the world, but I know no player likes losing. But one thing that did happen in a very positive sense for Tipperary in that match was your piece of skill in the first half, where you kind of... Actually, I'll let you describe it, because it was phenomenal, especially at this time of year, to do that in the conditions you did it in.
I kind of just, the ball was kind of at my feet, and it was kind of nearly too close to my body to raise it, so I kind of flicked it off my foot up into my hand, and that's not really something I thought about, but it's kind of just the freedom we're allowed to play with in Tip, like, and knowing that, kind of trying those things, that it won't lead to, you know, maybe getting taken off if you mess up, like, we're given that freedom, and you know, kind of trying those things in training, like, I don't want to be messing around, but I kind of didn't really think of it at the time.
Is it something you had done before in a game or even in training?
Not really. No. Only kind of poking around. Like, I don't know why I did it, really. Kind of, they're kind of things you don't think about, because if you think about it, you'll always mess up, nearly. Like, it's just something that comes naturally, nearly.
And does that go to show that hurling, as much as you can work and train and plan, it's still a very instinctive game, and instinct is still a real key part of the game of hurling?
Yeah, it definitely is. Like, I think, you know, once you're allowed to play with freedom and you're allowed to try different things, like, that's how you kind of unlock defences, and that's how teams really are able to put up scores. Like you're never really able to put up scores like through kind of like hurling's not a, it's not really a complicated game. Like you can't be told what to do once you go out on the pitch because it can just take a life of its own, and there's such factors to take into account. Like, and you just have to really, really express yourself at the end of the day.
Speaking of management and being told what to do, Liam Sheedy is staying on. I'm sure you're delighted with that, and that obviously was confirmed some time ago. What was confirmed in more recent days is that Owen Kelly is now kind of a bigger part of the backroom team, and Eamon O'Shea, I think, is performance manager. That's quite the backroom you have, and you seem to be well set up for 2020.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, you know, Liam has put all the resources we need. Kind of once we're willing to put it in, I think the backroom team he's put in are. They give us such feedback to be able to improve our game. I think that's one of Liam's main points, was to kind of get as good as backroom team as possible, so that he kind of has the backup he needs. And you know, definitely Owen and Eamon there, they have such insight into hurling, and kind of the insight, especially as a forward and a young player, the insights they give us are great, like true experience.
And I imagine if you like want a word of advice or just want to tweak something in your game, he's a good man to talk to, Owen.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah, he's he's straight and he's honest. Do you know, if you need to up your game, he'll tell you. He's very honest, and you know he definitely knows what he's talking about anyway, and we all know that. So and when he wants to say something, he will. So and people listen. So it's definitely a good trait.
We'll get back to the Fitzgibbon Cup in just a moment, but Liam said it the other day that although Tip won the All Ireland, they were patchy at times, so you want maybe a bit more consistency next year. So it's kind of a nice situation whereby you are All-Ireland champions, but there's still something to aim for and improvements you want to make. That's a nice place to be, I imagine, as a squad going into a new season.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Do you know, maybe that's Eamon's role as well, as performance director, to get our best performances. As you know, there's so many games now in the Munster Championship, and the All-Ireland is nearly a separate competition between each other. And you know, to win a Munster Championship is tough, and you know, maybe last year we were patchy, and we felt our performances are flat sometimes, and that's definitely something to work on this year.
Let's concentrate on things more immediate. The Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon Cup, it starts for UCC away to NUIG in Dangan on the weekend of the 11th and 12th of January. I forget whether it's the 11th or the 12th, but either way, that is a really tough start.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, going away to NUIG. They're a good team, and especially playing any team away in Fitzgibbon is tough. Especially, you know, when we're playing at home, we really do try to win the games, and can be a real advantage. But you know, we're going to have to be ready going up there, and especially our first game. If you're losing your first game, you could be in trouble. So that's definitely one we're going to be prepared for.
You're in a three-team group, so you really don't have any kind of room to mess up.
No, you don't. No, and especially three-team group. Like if everyone finishes on points or anything, so you want to be nearly winning every game to get through. Yeah,
and you have a spine of players from last year. There hasn't been too much change in the squad. How good is that?
It's been good, yeah. Do you know, because lads, as you said, kind of getting to know each other, they kind of know each other now, and all kind of the second years coming through have been, you know, they've kind of come into the panel and really added. Definitely, there's a few new lads there who are serious players, and they've really added a bunch.
Yeah. Listen, Mark, the very best of luck in the Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon Cup 2020. As we say, it's a tough start away to NUIG, but that should be a good game. It's actually a double header with the Electric Ireland Sigerson Cup game between NUIG and UCC, which is straight knockout. So I'm sure there'll be a good buzz around the UCC GA club in the run into that. I'm sure John Granger will be very excited about it, as will you be.
Yeah, you know, a big weekend up in Galway, and you know, hopefully the Sigerson team can come through as well, and we can come through.
Listen, the very best of luck, and of course, if you want to follow it all, you can do so via the hashtag #FirstClassRivals. Mark, best of luck.
Alright, cheers, thanks very much.
That's Mark Yeo there, speaking at the launch of the Electric Ireland Fitzgibbon Sigerson and Higher Education Championships taking place during the week. There was 8 minutes of time added on at the new White Hart Lane, Ryan, still ongoing actually, but it is Chelsea continuing to lead Tottenham by 2 goals tonight. We'll have a full time report on that in just a little bit. The stadium announcer had to come on twice to discuss racist comments being made.
Yeah, and I think Rudiger reacted to it as well on the pitch.
Yeah.
I think he turned to fans at one stage and kind of gestured a bit to them, which I think only actually added a bit of fuel to the fire. You know, not that you could blame him for reacting, but I think I think it's probably one of the rowdier games we've seen in a while. I don't think the Tottenham fans took well to losing at home and then losing a player, and obviously you've got those, you wouldn't even call them fans, that are chanting those things at Rudiger. It's no place for it. Like, but Rudiger's reaction now is kind of put a damp. Well, the whole thing has put a dampener on the whole thing, really.
Yeah, in fact, it was actually three times the announcement was made about racism in the stadium. But the full time whistle has just gone. Tottenham and Chelsea to get your full time report.
You'd wonder if coming over at Hanoi three times, like, surely after the second time when it doesn't stop, you have to kind of accelerate your reaction to it a little bit, because I don't know, coming on at Hanoi a third time. Yeah. After two times doing nothing, obviously isn't.
I suppose
going
they have to be seen to be doing something as well.
They do,
that's
but
the
I
most
think
simple and effective, not maybe not effective, but it's the most simple thing they can do.
Yeah, but you'd wonder how many of them are there. Surely you could just remove them after. Do you know? I don't know. Anyway, but it's full time now. Anyway, yeah. Chelsea 2, Tottenham 0.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk to Cork racing driver Luke Allen after he won the Formula 4 Championship last week in Malaysia.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
You've got to say as well, I guess, that result just showed you how good a coach Frank Lampard is in the job that he's been doing with Chelsea. 100%. I mean, no one expected that, I think.
No, not at all. No, I was fully expecting Tottenham to win easily at home today, certainly. Yeah. You know, it's a huge day for Frank Lampard. That's probably, I'd say, one of the biggest days he's had now since he took over. A massive day for him. That's Chelsea in fourth on Christmas Day, the season he took over, when nobody gave them a shot at getting anywhere near top four. Some people even doubted top six in his first year, since he only had that year at Derby County. But yeah, no, it's a brilliant day for him.
And if you can't tell, Ryan, the Arsenal fan, is quite delighted that Tottenham lost today.
Oh yeah, well, it's fantastic. Sun's out until the 11th of January. It's great. Thank you, Santa.
Right, we're going to talk, or actually we'll get that full-time report first from Ian Beach.
Tottenham 0, Chelsea 2 on the pitch. A deserved Chelsea win. They played the better football in a game that became increasingly nasty. Tottenham had Son Heung-min sent off for violent conduct, and the match culminated with two announcements over the public address system that racist behaviour in the stands was affecting the game. Willian scored the two Chelsea goals, the second a penalty, and Frank Lampard, the Chelsea manager, is celebrating that fact. Tottenham 0, Chelsea 2.
All right, and the latest from the Under-21A Hurling Championship final. Half-time from my leading news this time, 9 points to 7 down on the 4G pitch in Porkeycui. We're going to talk motor racing next, and Cork's Luke Allen creating history last week by winning the F4 Championship in Malaysia and winning by just 2 points on a hectic final weekend. He called into me to discuss his incredible achievement. Okay, we are joined in studio by the F4 champion, Luke Allen. How does that sound, champion?
Very good, yeah. I think that's the first time I've actually heard it. literally just off the plane now, and really happy to be in here talking.
That was my watch going off, yeah, sorry about that. Come here, what a weekend that must have been.
Yeah, oh, it was very, well, the whole year really was really nerve-wracking, and especially down to the last race. I mean, it was me and another competitor from Finland, Elias, who were really neck and neck all season, so it was a long weekend, and it was just 2 points at the end, so I'm obviously very relieved and very happy.
How many races was there over the weekend? Was it six?
Four races. And 10 weekends, so 40 races over the year.
And to win it by just 2 points shows just how phenomenally close it was, I guess.
It just makes you think back of all those just small positions and small moves in each race. They obviously add up, and I'm delighted now.
So obviously going into the last race of the weekend, you had to win, wasn't it?
It wasn't actually so... Well, going into the last weekend, I knew I needed to beat him. Mm. But the last race, I managed to do quite well in three races before that, and build up a small gap. So in the last race, I just need to get a top five.
Yeah.
And I just came in fifth in the end, so that was alright.
Just about, so. Yeah. What was that feeling like crossing the line, knowing that you're now the champion?
It's amazing. It's just like, it's just all the pressure in the world on your shoulders, and then all of a sudden, within kind of click of the fingers, it's just gone. And I knew it wouldn't be the best plane journey home if I hadn't won that championship. So it was good.
And was it Elias Seppänen, was it, you beat into to second place? So obviously you know him quite well, I suppose, over the course of the 10 meetings.
Yeah. I have nothing but respect for him, really. He was a very good driver. Kept me on my toes all season, and I'm thankful that there was someone that good to, because obviously you want to be racing against the best. And
did he make you raise your game, essentially?
I think we were all season, we were both challenging each other, and each taking steps forward, just because we were both pushing each other so much.
Did you get a big massive trophy at the end of it, or what's the story?
The prize giving is, I'm actually still waiting on the day for the prize giving, but
just go back on for the prize giving, is it?
Yeah.
That's going to be pretty cool. Looking back over the course of the season, I mean, like, we've spoken a couple of times over the course of the year, I mean, like, what kind of stands out, what was the highlight? Obviously winning, I know, like, but like...
Yeah, I think, yeah, there was one weekend in India where I won, well, in my eyes I won four races, but I got a penalty in one of the races, and I, what happened to the other one? Oh, and I got a jump. What? Oh yeah, no, my gearbox failed in the other race. Oh, so yeah. In my head, that was like the best weekend I think I've ever had, just pace wise, and good coming away with two wins regardless. But just over the whole season, just all the wins, especially from the back of the grid and the reverse grid races, they obviously stand out now.
Makes it all worth it, I'd imagine, because it's been a long year. It's been a lot of sacrifices to get you to this point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wanted to do all my family and friends and my sponsors proud, so I knew there was no better way in doing that than winning. So that was definitely a big motivation for me all year, and to stay on top of my game.
Did you feel pressure going into the final weekend? Kind of, as you say, the equipment that your family's made, your sponsors have made, or is that something you just put on yourself regardless?
I mean, I know my family and sponsors definitely wouldn't want me feeling pressure from them, but I think with anyone in a high level of sport, once their family and if they have sponsors have committed a certain amount to them, then they want to do them proud, and there obviously is that little bit of nervousness and kind of motivation to do them proud. Yeah.
And a nice Christmas present, not just for you, but all of them as well, I guess.
yeah, definitely. It's a really nice to finish off on a high going into Christmas and going into the winter break as well.
Yeah, and so what are the plans now for next year? Have you even thought about that? I mean, like...
I've been talking to a few teams over the last few months, actually. Nothing set in stone yet. Obviously, hopefully it'll be a bit easier to get sponsors now going into 2020 after having been champion. But there's a few offers in America, Europe and Asia, so it's all over the place at the moment, and hopefully I'll get over to wherever for a bit of testing in the new year, and but my plans and stone.
So you're going to sit down, is your dad kind of your main kind of like manager? And
yeah, well, at the moment I'm kind of just contacting the teams kind of through me. Obviously my dad likes to overlook everything, and just have a few advisors as well from people that have been through it all, and so I look for tips from all of them as well.
Yeah, because I can imagine it could be like quite intense, I suppose, and kind of head spinning, I suppose, very quickly.
Yeah, there's a bit of pressure to kind of make the right choice, and because once you commit to something, you've committed for a year, and a year is kind of a long time in when you're coming up in racing, so I think I'll definitely choose carefully and hopefully make the right choice.
You've enjoyed the Formula 4 experience though, I'd imagine,
haven't you? Yeah, I really have. Yeah, the cars are great to drive, and the championship, it was a great, I mean, I got so many laps over the year, so I think I've really built up as a driver, and I think I'm ready now to kind of face whatever next challenge comes.
You must be sick of the sight of airplanes at this point, are you? Are you not jet lagged to bits now this morning? Like,
yeah, surprisingly, I'm actually fine.
When did you get in?
My flight arrived
this morning, is it?
Yeah, about 8 o'clock this morning.
And you're here in our studios 4 hours later. You must be exhausted from it all. Like,
yeah, I could definitely do with not being in an airport or on a plane for a while now. But yeah, there's not actually that much of a break. I think I'm hoping to get back over in January, over somewhere, maybe America, for a bit of testing. And
obviously your next move though is going to be a level up.
Yeah, definitely. So one option is Formula 3 Asia, and there's another championship in America which is kind of equivalent to Formula 3. It's a USF 2000. It's kind of on the IndyCar package. I want to be racing in whatever the most competitive championship I can be in, the most competitive car, so it'll definitely be a step up anyway, I do.
Have you kind of got your career kind of mapped out in your head, and have you set time limits or kind of goals for yourself for the next couple of years?
Just over the last few months I've been focusing on that a lot, because I think it's important to have kind of at least a 3-year plan, and I have hopefully kind of sponsor regarding take each year as it comes, but I have what I'd like to do anyway mapped out.
And I assume the vision is just like, you know, you standing on top of a podium in a Formula 1 track somewhere.
I mean, that's just what dreams are made of, really, when you, especially just when I'm watching the Formula One races and I'm seeing these young drivers now, like Leclerc and Norris and all these guys just doing so well, and kind of I followed all them through when they are even in F4 and stuff like that. So it definitely gives me goosebumps watching them stand on Leclerc standing on top of the podium, and that's the dream, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. You must be kind of, I suppose, looking forward to just switching off from racing entirely for a week or two over Christmas, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely an obsession. It will be nice to relax and spend some time with the family and friends over the next few weeks. But
you'll be getting at your feet, though, I'd say, will you?
Kind of, yeah, there's not much time for resting, though. I want to get back out in the car in the new year.
Excellent, Luke. I'd imagine there's a number of people you'd like to thank over the years, there.
Yeah, obviously a special mention just to my mum and my dad, just for supporting me, not just this year, but throughout my
racing
career.
You couldn't do without their full support, I imagine.
Definitely. And all my family, my grandparents, my brother's sister, all my sponsors, they all know who they are. They've all been amazing, and I hope to keep them for 2020.
And if anyone else wants to get involved in sponsoring you, because as you say, you're F4 champion now,
hopefully that'll give me a bit of a boost. It's never easy really to get sponsors in, I think, whatever sporting discipline you're in, but I'll definitely need sponsors next year, to especially with the step up, and to stay in a competitive car in a competitive championship. Yeah, I'll get to work now with sponsors in the next few weeks.
Sounds like a plan. Luca, congratulations, man. Absolutely delighted for you.
Thanks very much, Rory. Nice to speak to you.
Yeah, great to talk to Luke Allen there about his achievement. Absolutely fantastic stuff, winning the Formula 4 Championship. And you just, you even hear him mentioning the names of guys who've won it, like, you know, Charles Leclerc is competing in Formula 1 right now.
Yeah.
A couple of years after winning the Formula 4 Championship.
Big things ahead for Luca, by the sounds of it, from the sounds of him there anyway, definitely.
Yeah, sky is the limit for him. Really nice guy, and looking forward to following his career and seeing how he progresses over the next couple of years. And fingers crossed, we're doing a Big Red Bench live from the Monaco Grand Prix in a couple of years' time.
Oh, we could work on our 10.
We'll work on that, yeah. So Luca, no pressure, buddy. We want a trip
somewhere sunny, Luca, if you're listening, that'd be great.
Alright, we're going to talk Gaelic Games again, and Dr. Con Murphy are retiring as a doctor. The legend has been involved in Cork GAA since the 70s, but he is going to continue his work with the Cork and UCC GAA teams. But rather especially, All-Ireland winning Cork captain Tomás Mulcahy sat down with Dr. Con for a chat about his career with Cork, and it's a lovely, lovely piece, and I thought we'd play it tonight. So this is Tomás Mulcahy, the All-Ireland winning Cork captain, speaking to the legendary Dr. Con Murphy.
1977 February, 42 years. Incredible journey and an incredible story.
Thank you. I suppose when I qualified in college, I wasn't sure what I'd do. So I was doing different jobs in different hospitals. And 76, I spent a year in Tralee doing medicine. And then by pure accident, I got the gig with the Harfordos and footballers. And as far as I was concerned, the only thing I wanted to do then was get back as near Cork as I could. So I came back, and there was another doctor here at the time, Conor O'Connell. He gave me a job, but my main ambition was to be in Cork, so I could be near the teams.
Describe to me how you're feeling right now. You're coming to the end of that 42-year career.
Very emotional. I found it very hard saying goodbye. That the patient's upset. They understand why him retiring. I was 70 in June. But you must realise that I've known a lot of them for over 40 years. So it's a big change for them.
Known as the best sports doctor in Cork, you've seen many changes over the years. How has the sports diagnosis changed from the 70s to now?
Well, it's funny. I mean, a sports injuries doctor was unheard of, really, when I started out. Cork rarely had a doctor. Most teams didn't do doctors. So I got involved, and because I was with the Cork teams, I saw quite a lot of sports injuries. But over the years then, when MRI and all these things came in, fellas like me, all I was useful for was the mobile phone and the contacts. No one wanted to know what I thought of the injury. It was, can you get me scanned and can you get me seen by this expert or that expert? So it changed greatly.
If I said to you before you go, you can change one thing from a medical point of view in the GAA, what would that be?
It would be that we find a way of reducing the training. It's gone too serious altogether. And we're in danger of becoming elitist. That it's only the counties that can do that amount of work, and training will survive. There's no way all the counties can compete with the training some of us are doing.
And I'm sure you had to make a couple of pretty tough decisions as well.
For match day, or ruling somebody out, or saying
that time we used to leave it go till last minute, and if you remember, I ruled you out of a Munster final. You weren't too impressed.
No.
Ruled JBM out with broken ribs, if you remember,
in 1983.
Probably cost us the match.
Yes, 1985, I think, yeah. Ireland semi-final, yeah.
Yeah, against Galway.
Against Galway.
Most of the time, it's obvious that they're not right. But that is a hard thing to do, to tell a fellow he's not fit to play.
The GAA was very quick to bring in a backdoor system. But in the surgery in the past, you had your own backdoor.
I had, and I lost it in the flood. When this place flooded, I got rid of it because the back door was the bane of my life. Because fellas like Teddy Mack and Tomás Mulcahy wouldn't dream of queuing up outside with the patients. They would slip in, and everyone knew they were sneaking in. And there used to be bored and bad feeling in the waiting room.
As you sit in front of me, I'm looking up at a photograph up behind you on the wall.
Wishy Murphy. Tell me, you mentioned he could have been president of the GAA. Tell me his background.
He was from Bear Island, and he was a veterinary surgeon. He was telling me he himself and his brother used to row from Bear Island, cycle to Bantry, taxi to Cork, train to Croke Park, and do the same coming back in order to play for Cork. His father used to light a bonfire so as he'd find his way home to Bear Island. So I grew up listening to those kind of stories. So I grew up in the backyard thinking I'd play for Cork. Well, I was about 14 when it dawned on me that that wasn't going to happen.
I did check Wikipedia before I came in for Dr. Conmurphy, and I see four football county medals with UCC.
They were all in the one day. we got the county final in 1973 with 18 players, if you count me as number 18. I was as a selector, the board delegate. I collected a box of medals, gave them out, one for myself and three left over.
So you're the proud holder of four senior county football medals in the same day.
Without playing.
But go back to Weish. I mean, I'm looking at the caption and I'm looking at his record as a player, and he could have been president of the GAA, you mentioned.
Well, I suppose he was chairman of Munster Council. He's only 54 when he dropped it above the Kilkenny Limerick 73 All-Ireland final. And I suppose I would say he had his eye in it, definitely, but it didn't work out, sadly.
So, when you went to Bear Island, you didn't get on the bike, and you didn't get the walk across, and you didn't get the bike or the way to Cork to go to Croke Park?
No.
But no. Fond memories.
Fond memories. Great upbringing. Brought up in the GAA, I mean, what more could you ask for?
Fantastic.
I suppose, Doc, they say all good things have to come to an end.
Thanks,
it's a sad time for you. Yeah. But I started by saying congratulations, and I'm going to finish by saying congratulations. You've been a stalwart, you've been a father figure, and I think I'm speaking on behalf of everybody. The public that came in here, the sporting people that came into your surgery. It's been an incredible journey, and you've been a friend to everybody. So can I say congratulations and thank you very, very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Tomás.
That was really, really nice stuff. There's Tomás Mulcahy speaks to the legendary Dr. Conn, who closed his surgery just a couple of days ago, actually retiring at the age of 70, but he will be involved in both the Cork and UCCGA teams still. But really, really nice stuff. Really That's nice to hear him there.
So touching. What a man. I'd say he has more stories, you know.
I think you only kind of like scratching the surface there. I mean, it was kind of funny, he was saying, should I rule you out of a game?
Yeah.
And Tomás... you weren't happy, and I was like, nope. He's still feeling it.
In
about a Munster final, taking JBM out of a match against Galway in 85. It's
30 years later, he's still got it in the back of his head.
Fantastic stuff. But really, really nice stuff to hear there from Dr. Conn. All right, just before we go, Nemo Rangers and Carl Finn going head to head in the Munster or the All Ireland semi final just after Christmas. We had the Nemo lads in last week.
Yes.
They were quite excited. There was about 40 of them in the studio.
Ford, yeah, myself and Kieran could barely fit in the room. There were so many of them.
We're going to get views from their opponents now. Cara Finn, we're going to hear from Cara Finn's Michael Farrer.
Michael, you're preparing for an AIB All-Ireland Club semi-final now. It's coming around a lot earlier this year in terms of we just got a couple of weeks of preparation. Has that changed things for Cara Finn as opposed to maybe filling the gap to get ready for February as you would have been in the last 2 years?
Yeah, it definitely changes things up a bit. I mean, you're starting back that bit earlier, you probably don't really get a break really whatsoever, maybe 3 days over the Christmas period, but whereas usually you get kind of 10 days to 2 weeks. It's different, but we look forward to a new challenge.
Has that changed the Christmas schedule in the Farrer household then?
No doubt it has, yeah. I mean, you're kind of restricted to just be fully focused on the coming semi-final, so yeah.
I guess, look, this isn't an unusual feeling for you guys getting ready, albeit the change in time of the year, but the last 3 seasons, this has been a kind of a 12-month run for Cara Finn each year.
Yeah, thankfully we're blessed at the minute with the panel that we have and the management structure that we have in place. We're blessed that we're on the road again and hopefully we can go another step.
When it transpired that you were going to play Nemo Rangers, a repeat of the final of a couple of years ago as well, most people thought mouth-watering semi-final. As a player, does it feel like that as well? A very exciting game?
It does, because you know you're playing a very established club team who has held a number of records over the years. So I'm sure that they'll be chomping at the bit to get us in the semi-final again after the final 2 years ago. So we're looking forward to it.
You made a bit of history this year in terms of becoming just the third Galway side ever to win 7 in a row. I'm sure record is something to think about when you finish your playing career, but is it special to have run off that succession of titles over the last decade?
Yeah, so it's level with Tuam Stairs at the minute in Galway. To do that was something special. I mean, we didn't really dwell on it too much because we were out the following weekend in the Connacht semi-final. So I suppose there are things that you kind of look back on when you finish your career.
Ultimately, I suppose it's about trying to win another AIB All-Ireland Club Football Championship. And when you are as successful as you've been, and particularly going to Croke Park on Patrick's Day over the last couple of years, do you think when you've got a panel this strong, you've got to try and cash this in for as many medals as you possibly can?
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, you're playing with a group of friends, a group of lads that you grew up with your entire life. So to tag out week in, week out with those guys is something special. And to win as much as we're winning, we haven't really stopped to think about it. We just stay going, and I suppose it's a compliment to the management structure that's in place, that they just keep us driven and we're getting the rewards, thankfully.
That's Michael Farrer there of Cara Finn, who faced Nemo Rangers, of course, in the All-Ireland semi-final. That's pretty much it from us for our final show
of the decade.
Of the year, of the decade. It's our final show before Christmas. What's your plan for Christmas, buddy?
I am working tomorrow morning. Yeah. And I'll finish at lunchtime, and then I'm going to go home and see the fam for a week. I'm back in here on New Year's Eve, but I have a nice break.
They'll be sick of you after a few days. You'll have to be coming back to Cork.
I'll probably be sent back around the 27th, I'd imagine, when they're sick
of
me.
Get out!
But I'm planning on literally doing... I'm going to be sat at home, wrapped up in blankets, eating chocolates and watching movies for about 5 days straight.
That literally sounds like the dream.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, what about yourself?
I've got my two girls who are super excited. Well, Cecilia's the eldest, she's four, she's super excited about seeing Santa.
So you'll be up at the crack of dawn.
I'm up at the crack of dawn. Anyway, any young kids will tell you up at the crack of dawn, no matter when it's Christmas or not. And Isabel's a little bit too young, she's only one and a bit, so she doesn't understand Christmas. But Cecilia's super excited, she keeps reminding me she's on the nice list.
And is she?
Yeah, she is.
Okay.
So Santa will be coming on Wednesday, so really looking forward to that, and just looking forward to spending some time with the family, and as you said, just eating and drinking eggnog or whatever it is, and
exactly
just enjoying the few
Home
days.
Alone, Die
Home
Hard.
Alone. We watched Home Alone this morning, actually.
Did you?
So yeah, brilliant. And we were going to watch Home Alone 2, but it's not as good as the first Home Alone. It's a pale imitation, but like we watched that. And I think tonight going to watch Die Hard 2, because we watched Die Hard 1 last week. Because they're the ultimate Christmas films.
100%. Yeah.
But that's it, guys. Thanks very much for listening to us on the Big Red Bench over the year, over the last decade, over the last 20 years. The Big Red Bench has been running on Cork's Red FM. We'll be back in the new year. Really, really excited about the year ahead. It's going to be a big, big year. So look, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your Christmas. Hope you have a very, very nice one. Hope you have a great time. We'll see you then. Happy New Year. Happy Christmas. Thank you for listening to the Big Red Bench. Stay tuned to Cork's Red FM. And we wish you and yours the very best. Good night.
Miss the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.